This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. In the early 1980s, if you remember back then, IBM dominated the market for personal computers to the point where Intel was giving them priority, software made for one company's computers which wouldn't run on others. And the only portable computer on the market had some frustrating shortcomings because of that. But all of that was about to change because in 1982, three friends met in an industrial designer, met with an industrial designer in a Houston House of Pies, a restaurant still there. And they walked away with the design for the first IBM-compatible portable computer. They sketched it on the back of a placemat. And from there, Compaq became the fastest company to enter the Fortune 500. And within 5 years, they were making $1 billion in sales per year. Compaq, eventually joined by other small computer makers, led the charge in pushing software compatibility and portability, and they eventually put giant IBM out of the PC business. Silicon Cowboys is a new documentary film about this real-life David versus Goliath tale, and after its premiere at South by Southwest this spring, it opens in select theaters nationwide today. Director Jason Cohen is here in New York to talk about it. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great, great film.
Thank you.
I loved it. It starts out as the story of these three friends. You have Rod Canyon. You tell us who they are.
Sure. Rod Canyon, Bill Murto, and Jim Harris are the three founders. And as you said, they did draw up the first sketch on the back of a placemat in the House of Pies diner in Houston.
And the three engineers who they quit their jobs at Texas Instruments, right, to start this company.
Correct. They quit with not even having another job or even an idea yet of what they were going to do.
All right. Well, we actually tracked down Rod Canyon. He couldn't be here with us today, but he did sit down and share some of the stories with us yesterday in New York.
We had gone over to Bill's house in, I guess, if you go back to September of 81, with just the idea of, okay, let's start a company. Now, how do we do that? And we really didn't know. Nobody that we were with knew how to do it. So we bought an entrepreneur's manual to try to figure out what the basics were. And then we started trying to figure out, well, you know, what do we really want to do? Now, the idea for a Mexican restaurant came up because we had always joked about, well, we ought to go do a Mexican restaurant. Fortunately, that was really kind of kidding, and we quickly got past that and began to try to decide what we were going to do. And we knew it needed to be something in the personal computer arena because it was IBM entering that market that caused the market to explode, and we knew that's where the opportunity was. So let's figure out something. Now, to be fair, we never thought we would build a personal computer. That was too big a thing. You know, we're just three guys starting up. We need to do something small. But after a while, the idea for this portable computer that ran IBM software came up, it was like, wow, that's too good to pass up. Let's go see if we can figure out how to do that. So we started down that path, and that was really like stepping onto a rocket platform.
That was Rod Canyon. What made this story so interesting to you?
You know, it's a great narrative. I mean, it's as you said, it's a David versus Goliath story. And yes, it's about computers. And I know not everyone can follow the language of computers. I can't follow a lot of it, to be perfectly honest. Although I certainly am a bit more educated than I used to be. But it's a story that anyone can relate to, of the little guy taking on the big guy and succeeding and sort of stopping the bully. And it affects us all today.
And Silicon Cowboys as a name.
Yeah, you know, I do have to give credit to Ross Dinnerstein, our producer, who came up with that title in the middle of the night, and he emailed us, and we all loved it, or texted in the middle of the night when he came up with it, because we had been searching for a title. But yeah, for us, Cowboys, obviously, these guys were from Houston, and yeah, we wanted to get that across. But they were also, you know, they're mavericks. They quit their jobs. They started this company with nothing, took a chance, and you know they had that spirit, and that is a Texas spirit. So the Cowboys sort of pertains to that as well.
In fact, Rod Canyon told us that he liked this label quite a lot.
We really were cowboys in the sense of it was the Wild West of the PC industry. It was just getting going. Anything went, you know, as long as you were willing to stand behind it. And there was a lot of risk involved. So you had to be willing to take risk if you were going to get anywhere. So it truly was a cowboy kind of situation.
How were they treated when they came up with this idea by the industry? Did being an outsider help them actually succeed?
Yeah, and you know, we've talked about that. They were sort of overlooked. They were down in Houston. Everything was going on in Silicon Valley, and then you had IBM out here in New York. And particularly IBM, and we have a couple of voices from IBM in the film that said this was just a blip on the screen. And that's after they had sold $100 million the first year. IBM was not paying attention. They were just this little company from Houston, and IBM had put so many other companies out of business by suing them with, coming in with big lawsuits because they had copied the code, which Compaq was very careful not to do and did it well. But they were sort of overlooked, and it worked to their advantage.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, the first sketch of their product was on the back of a menu from the House of Pies.
A placemat, yes.
A placemat. And you actually went back to the same place to film?
Yeah, it was one of the most gratifying scenes that for me in the film. We went back there. The lovely people at the House of Pies sort of let us take over for a day. And fortunately for us, it's sort of a snapshot in time there. It looks identical to what it looked like 40 years ago. It was just perfect. And we had just had so much fun filming in there, and we filmed a reenactment of them sketching the placemat, and it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Mm-hmm. There were many companies out there that were also compatibles, but they had copied the IBM code used to run their software, but one of the monumental feats of Compaq's first year was reverse engineering this and Microsoft's IBM compatible operating system, so they did not violate the copyright. How did they do that?
It was laborious. I mean, it was a huge undertaking, and they really made sure they did it right, because if they didn't, they would have been sued, and they would have been put out of business. And they basically, in the film, we say that one of the guys says it was like playing baseball blindfolded, because they couldn't even look at the manual from the IBM that had the code. If they had looked at it, then they would have been sued. And so they had to do it all from figure it out by, trial and error.
And Rod Canyon told us that this gave them an edge on IBM in later competition.
When we found out that we couldn't get a version of MS-DOS from Microsoft that was compatible with IBM, that was actually an assumption in our business plan when we got our original funding. And it was about a month later that we met with Bill Gates in a back room in San Francisco and told him what we wanted. And he actually didn't know at the time for sure. So he went away and talked to his people. And we found out later that, no, they can't do that. They can't sell us what they sell IBM. That belongs to them. And as IBM is their biggest customer, they're not going to go reverse engineer it. And the realization that we had to go do it, it seemed like almost an insurmountable task. But we decided, nope, if that's the only way we can get there, we got to go do it. So we went just plowed forward and actually got it done. And now, that turned out to be, it seemed like this is one little step here. But learning how to reverse engineer it ourselves was a technology that later on separated us from everybody else. So even down at the end of the decade, when we came out with a backward-compatible high-speed bus, we were able to do that because we knew how to make things run all the old software. IBM didn't. Their bus was incompatible. And it was that difference, really, that led to the success of the industry standard over IBM.
And that industry standard was Compaq's response to IBM's attempt to dodge the compatibility entirely with something they called the microchannel, which allowed its computers to do much more, do it faster, but which other computer makers would have to reverse engineer if they wanted to keep up, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah, the PS2, which is what they put out, was basically IBM's way to squash everybody. That was going to be it.
That's what they did.
This is what they wanted to do. You had to use, everything had to be IBM, and you couldn't use anything else with this new system, and they were hoping that was going to catch on, but it actually ended up failing pretty miserably.
What was the defect in IBM's microchannel?
It wasn't necessarily a defect in the actual computer, but the fatal mistake they made was that it rendered useless all of the previous software and peripherals that all their customers had already bought. So every company was going to be forced to buy everything new again, billions of dollars of equipment, and you know they're selling to huge companies. So I think that was the fatal flaw, I think.
So here's Compaq saying, hey, you know, you don't have to buy the new IBM stuff to run the microchannel.
Right. And
we've got stuff that will run on it.
Yeah, and it's they teamed up. It was called the Gang of Nine. They teamed up with nine other big companies, including Microsoft and Intel. And they got together and had a press conference, and they offered this for free. They offered this new standard for free to the whole industry to combat this, and it caught fire. And now that's what we are. That's what we use.
What about the machine itself? What made the Compaq better than? I mean, I had a K Pro at that time.
Yes.
There was an Osborne.
Yep.
There were these luggables, as we used to call them, like carrying a sewing machine around.
Sure.
What made their machine so much better?
So theirs was a luggable. It was 28 pounds. It had a nice leather handle on the top. It looked like a sewing machine. You know, we purchased a few for the filming and, you know, had fun playing
around. They're
still
around
with them.
To get them.
Yeah. We found them on eBay. Yeah. I'll be honest, the shipping costs more than the computer, like three times as much, I think. You know, the reason why it really caught on was it was made well. It was revolutionary in its design at the time. And when you look at it, when you look at an iPhone and you look at that, it's mind-boggling. But the Osborne was the only one that had made a little bit of a dent. But this took it a step further. And then the IBM compatibility. They were the first ones to ever do this, where you could take IBM software and run it in this computer. And that was the dealers they took it to love that.
And was that the backbreaker for IBM? What forced IBM out of the PC?
No, that was just the beginning, the portable, you know, and there were a few times where, and that's what our story tells. It's sort of this up and down over a decade of where there's these sort of near fatal blows by IBM to Compaq, and they somehow dodge it each time. But there's a few times where they get pretty close to put, you know, potentially putting them under. But they're able to kind of move around it.
Did they ever make mistakes, Compaq missteps?
Oh, yeah. And you know, we do talk a little bit in the film. You know, this was a 10-year window that we looked at, and it goes up until the time when Rod was ousted from the company that he founded, as well as, you know, the other founders.
Like Steve Jobs. Sent
to yeah, well, you know, and this was happening in the 80s when Jobs was forced out of Apple. Apple was sort of a much smaller player in the PC market back then. So we try to look at some of the pitfalls and some of the moments that didn't go so well for them as well in the film.
Mm-hmm. The documentary also covers some of the unique work culture that Compaq had, reminiscent of some of the perks of working at Google and other modern companies, as Rod Canyon told us.
You know, the movie mentions the three Cokes and the no parking, no reserve parking space. But, you know, to me, those are sort of almost trivial. They flow from the basic idea of, well, whoever gets here first, you know, they ought to get the best parking place. And, you know, if we can provide Cokes so people don't have to worry about having the right change at any point in time, then why not keep doing it when we're 10,000 people?
Mm-hmm. But, of course, all good things must come to an end.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, part of what we wanted to tell in the story was, you know, this startup that started with these three guys eventually became appeared a little bit closer to what they had railed against, which was a large corporate, you know, company with thousands of employees, and you lose some of that culture, and it's just something you can't sustain.
Hmm. Talking with director Jason Cohen, director of Silicon Cowboys, which is a new documentary opening in the selected theaters nationwide today on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. What cities?
It's playing in, I think we're up to about 14 cities, New York, L.A., Chicago, Houston, of course, San Francisco, Miami, I think Boston outside of Dallas. So, and the other thing which we didn't mention is it's available on VOD. Now.
On demand,
on iTunes, Amazon, Google. You can log on right now and you'll see it on there.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any things that might not have happened without Compaq, if Compaq had not come along?
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot in the film about the impact they had on the mobile industry, because that portable was the first time people actually recognized that you could live in something closer to a mobile world and being able to take your work home and out of the office. So we talked a lot about, you know, with the iPhone, you know, some people, even one guy, one of our people in the film says you cannot get to the iPhone without the compact portable.
In fact, we have Rod Canyon talking about how he pictured a world in which compact had not been successful, and he did. He drew a line straight to the iPhone.
All of the clones would have ended up under IBM's thumb, and most of them would have gone out of business, and compact would have been acquired or gone out of business somewhere along the way. But more importantly to what we do today is because the industry standard stayed in place and actually strengthened, the technology advanced so rapidly during the 90s and the early 2000s. If it had been controlled by IBM, they would not have allowed the technology to come out nearly as fast, because that's part of what they did. They brought it out when it was on their schedule, not, you know, whenever anybody else wanted to. And so I'm absolutely sure that the technology would not have advanced as rapidly. And I don't think we would have had the technology needed for Steve Jobs to develop the iPhone in 07. And, you know, maybe it would have come 5 or 10 years later, but Steve didn't last that long. He died in 2011. And so I almost think we would have missed that whole era. Now, we had lots of smartphones and we had, you know, PDAs, but it was the breakthrough that his vision created that led to everything we have today.
You know, I was reminded of The Soul of a New Machine, that the book, of when I was watching the film. What makes this a more compelling story than just another story about a computer company?
Honestly, for a big part of it for me was it's a story that people don't know. You know, we all obviously know the Jobs story, and we know the Gates story, and we now know the Zuckerberg story. And this is a story that, you know, as Rod just said, you know, it had an impact. Things would have looked drastically different, and I don't think people realize that, and I don't think people knew about this this story. And it is, it's just a great underdog story, and how they did this.
Did they all land on their feet?
They all, you know, they all left the company, and you
rich.
Know, they all did. They all did well. I mean, you know, at its peak, they were up to about $3 billion by the end of the 1980s. Before they left.
Yeah.
They've all gone on to do some consulting and things like that.
Wow. Well, it's a great story, and I highly recommend Silicon Cowboys, the documentary about compact computer, and it premiered at South by Southwest, and it's opening in select theaters nationwide and on demand.
Yep, you can just go to siliconcowboysmovie.com.
Oh, there you have it. Jason Cohen, director of the new documentary.